The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter Number 14, Text Number 37, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on December 27th, 2014, in Adelaide, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Evam
vitta
vyatisanga vivriddha vaira anubandha api purva vasanaya mitta udvahati atta apavahati. Evam vitta vyatisanga vrida vairanubandho pipurva vasanaya mitta utvahatatapavahati.
Evam
in this
vitta
vyatisanga,
because of monetary transactions,
vrividha
increased,
vaira
anubandha,
having relationships of enmity, api although
purva
vasanaya, by the fructifying results of previous impious activities.
Mitta,
with each other.
Udvahati,
become united by means of the marriage of sons and daughters. Atta,
thereafter,
apavahati, they give up the marriage or get a divorce. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although people may be enemies, in order to fulfill their desires again and again, they sometimes get married. Unfortunately, these marriages do not last very long, and the people involved are separated again by divorce or other means. Report. As stated previously, every conditioned soul has the propensity to cheat, even in marriage. Everywhere in this material world, one conditioned soul is envious of another. For the time being, people may remain friends, but eventually they become enemies again and fight over money. Sometimes they marry and then separate by divorce or other means. On the whole, unity is never permanent. Due to the cheating propensity, both parties always remain envious. Even in Krishna consciousness, separation and enmity take place due to the prominence of material propensities. Vandeham Shri Guru, Shri Jatapadu Kamalam, Shri Gudun Vaishnavam Shcha, Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam, Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishwakam Vitam Shcha, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishayishu Shunyavadi Paschachi Desha Tadi. Prabhupada's really heavy. Prabhupada is heavy. This is heavy. He says, even in Krishna consciousness. Wow. So what kind of Krishna consciousness is that? One could have. That there is enmity, separation, material propensities. That's called neophyte Krishna consciousness. You see. This is not a pure devotee, obviously. This is the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness. So we may chuckle about it, but actually, hey, you know, it comes back to us. Really, it does. Can we say that we're completely free from lust, from greed, from anger, from madness, illusion, and envy? Can any of us claim, oh yes, I'm completely free from it? Let's be honest. We're contaminated. So this actually talks about us. So in spite of our tendency to be want to be separated, to have enmity towards each other, we somehow have to work together to please Srila Prabhupada, you see. We have to just tolerate these, you know, this envious, somehow just, you know, in spite of it, I guess the best term, in spite of our desire not to work together, not to love each other, to be envious, we just have to curb that down and on the basis of higher knowledge, okay, I'm going to work together, even though I don't always feel like it, I'm going to work together cooperatively with the devotees. Even though I don't always feel like it. Sometimes I'm disturbed by the devotees, but I'm just going to tolerate it, and I'm going to work together with the devotees to please Srila Prabhupada. You see? What does that do? That means you become purified. Gradually, these tendencies, the envious nature, the greedy, lusty, angry, maddened, illusioned self, gradually is subdued and becomes conquered over. So this is very poignant purport here. Even people who are enemies, they get married. What is that's pretty heavy. They're enemies and they get married. How you can say they're enemies? Oh, they say we're in love. So how you can say they're enemies when you say they're in love? Well, it's very clear, understand. How you can say they're enemies, because actually, I love you, but it's actually I love myself and I want to gratify myself using you. You see, that's what it really is. This I love you is just a facade. I love you, honey. You see, it's just a facade. It's really a facade. I love myself. I don't give a damn about anybody else. And I just want to gratify my senses using you. And therefore I say I love you to hype you into becoming my object of sense gratification. That's really what's going on. Put all the cards on the table. That's really what's happening, you see. Then that's material consciousness. Also a neophyte devotee can be guilty of this too, as Prabhupada's pointing out here, you see. So, that's the reality, and instead of saying, oh no, it's not true, I'm really a pure devotee, I really love pure heart. Instead of trying to defend our cheating, we should just admit our fallen nature and understand I need to be cured and I got to take the cure. And that cure is given by Prabhupada. This whole process of sadhana bhakti will cure us of all these material propensities, these lording it over, envious mentalities that we've been holding on to tightly for millions and billions of lifetimes, you see. If we take advantage of this one lifetime, well, we've got a human body. This is the ideal situation in which to conquer over all this stuff that's been burdening us and anchoring us here in karma chakra for millions and billions of lifetimes. We have a golden opportunity. Not only we have the human birth, but we've come in contact with the greatest Acharya in the Kali Yuga, his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. We are so fortunate, you see. So don't, there's a saying in America, I don't know if they use it here, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. When you have a golden opportunity, take it. Don't lose it, you see. So we've got we have the human birth, which is a golden opportunity, and on top of that, we have even a more golden opportunity. We've gotten the contact with the divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is so powerful. He's such a powerful acharya. Simply by his potency, the entire Kali Yuga can be pushed into a state of remission, and there's coming a golden era of Lord Chaitanya. Just by the potency, there's so much potency in Srila Prabhupada. He has what's called Gaura Shakti. He has the potency of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, fully invested in him, you see. And by his potency, this whole Kali Yuga can be pushed into remission. Not just for a few, but for the whole planet. Actually, the whole universe. That's why Prabhupada is called Jagat Guru, the spiritual master of the whole universe. By his potency, the whole universe can become liberated back to home, back to Godhead. So how fortunate we are to have come in contact with this person who has the potency to drive evil away. You see? We had one song. I used to be on a wonderful preaching program that was called The Roadshow. Prabhupada actually very much liked it. He even attended one of our concerts. We had a rock opera, and it was a story of a hippie who became a devotee. And we would go to universities, and they would pay $1,000. That was a lot of money in those days. They would pay $1,000 to us to put on our rock opera on the campus. They'd pay us money to come and preach to the students. It was a great arrangement. It was a rock opera. And one song in that rock opera was called Jagat Guru. And it was so wonderful. It was so nice. Prabhupada actually came and attended in Pittsburgh our rock opera. In those days, devotees never applauded. That's something only the karmis do. Never applauded. But Prabhupada was the only one in the audience applauded, because they were all devotees. And Prabhupada, every number of Prabhupada would applaud, and he was the only one applauded. But this one song was called Jagat Guru, and it said, the pure devotee... I don't remember the whole song, but the pure devotee comes, the pure devotee comes, and then the evil has to end. Jagat Guru, spiritual master of the universe. Jagat Guru, Prabhupada. So that was like the chorus of the song. It was so powerful. You know, the drums were going, the lead guitar was really powerful. The pure devotee comes, and then the evil has to end. I mean, it was really powerful. And that's a fact. Such great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, who possess completely full Gaura Shakti, is manifested in them. They have the power to completely, you know, dissipate the Kali Yuga and bring in that golden era that's predicted. That golden era was... began with the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's Krishna Das Kaviraj has described what it's going to be like when that golden era comes to its full manifestation. It's a nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sat janna dur janna pangu jadda anagana premavanyaya dubala jagatara janna. This Krishna consciousness movement, it is prema tsunami, a tidal wave of love of God. And it will inundate, it will drown everyone. It will inundate the entire universe, drowning everyone. The sajjana, the pious men, the durjana, the impious men, the lame, the invalid, the blind, everybody will become inundated in this prema tsunami. So, we get to be the pioneers. We're the early on participants in this, the greatest paradigm shift in the whole Kali Yuga, if not in the whole universal manifestation. We get to be on the cutting edge of this paradigm shift, you see. How many years ago? 1965. How many years ago is that? 66. And this kind of was incorporated. See, 76, 86. 96, 2006. We're going almost 50 years, coming to almost 50 years. That's just the very beginning. 50 years on, this is still the very beginning pioneering stages. Even though ISKCON in many ways is, it's beyond the pioneering stage in many ways. Certainly not just one little storefront like it was in the beginning. But if you can understand where it's going to be, in the next 5,000 years, and how the high court judges will be wearing tilak, and the whole world will be Vaishnava culture, this is very much the beginning phases of our Krishna consciousness inundation of the planet. So we have to understand what our duty is as servants of Srila Prabhupada at this time. But we have to really be, each one of us should be a spiritual revolutionary, every one of us, for bringing in, doing everything we possibly can with our every thought, our every word, and our every deed, for bringing in this global inundation of Krishna bhakti. Say, what about my Krishna consciousness? Well, that's the secret of success is, the more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. So the more you're in the mood of giving Krishna to others, then Krishna becomes more and more and more your property. So actually you can work it both ways. You can say, okay, I'm going to increase my Krishna consciousness so I'm more potent for giving to others. Great. And then you can work it the other way too. I'm going to be more absorbed in giving Krishna to others because then I automatically get Krishna. So you actually work it from both ends. That's the way to do it. And so one devotee asks, well, how do you balance it? How much time you spend giving Krishna to others and how much time you spend to get it for yourself? And I said, well, from 4 a.m. to 9 a.m., get Krishna, and from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., give Krishna, and from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., get Krishna. See, in the morning program is a time when you focus, you do your own personal sadhana, your meditation to deepen your own Krishna consciousness. The artis are there, the kirtan, the japa, the class. This is a time for you to enhance and increase your Krishna consciousness. And then during the day, we have so many activities for giving Krishna to others. So both things are there in our daily activities. Getting Krishna for ourselves, and then giving Krishna to others. But someone says, well, I have no time to preach hardly. I'm working a job. Well, you can give a portion of your earnings to help others who are actively preaching Krishna consciousness. And in that way, by the austerity of your doing, of earning money and donating the money, you see, much as you can afford, that also is the same purifying potency. Whether you're a preacher or you're assisting the preachers, they all get the same result of pure love of God. So in this way, we can live our lives in a wonderful, happy, blissful way and overcome these, actually it's quite embarrassing, revelation that here I am a devotee, but I have, I'm getting married, but I don't really care about my spouse at all. I'm just thinking about myself. I mean, Prabhupada is really, hitting the nail right on the head. Even in Krishna consciousness, separation and enmity take place due to the prominence of material propensities. So let's, instead of arguing with Prabhupada, let's just take the medicine. Okay, I'm a materialistic rascal. I'm always full of lust. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that about himself, you see. Gopina mama nivedana shuno vishayi durjana sada kamarata kichu nahi moraguna. Kichu nahi moraguna. I don't have any good qualities. I'm just a materialistic rascal. I'm always full of lust. If Bhaktivinoda Thakur can sing that about himself, what is our position? Oh yeah, I'm a Paramahansa. So this is how you actually become a Paramahamsa. Admit you're a demon and say, I got a lot of work to do. Admit, hey, I'm really a demon. I'm trying to be a devotee, but I've had so many demoniac qualities. I'm so selfish, I'm so greedy, I'm so lazy, crazy, so many things. So that's how you actually become a Paramahamsa, by honestly admitting your anarthas and then seriously dedicating your life to conquer them. So there may be some questions. I can try to answer them. Yes.
Yeah, is a comment.
Comment? Okay, fine. Go ahead. We'd love to hear.
Since this is material world and we come into contact with one another, we are already enemies from the past lives. That's why we come together due to some dues and some things has to be paid back so that we come together.
So I abused somebody in my past life, now I have to come back and be abused by them. Yeah.
That's what we come together.
That's karma, yeah.
It's according to the karma, we families and husband and wife and all that, they come together.
Yeah, I tortured somebody in the last life and they come back and torture me in this life.
Yeah. Yeah. So it comes, it manifests sometimes.
Yeah. So that's why we have to really cultivate pure devotional service, because pure devotional service will get rid of all this, you know, this torturing, lording it over, exploitative mentality, will completely kick it out. We have to really go for Shuddha Bhakti, and that's a thing. Okay, you mentioned that, you mentioned how in a neophyte state we have negative material tendencies. Therefore, we have to tolerate one another and work together. So is there anything we can do to develop and strengthen our ability to tolerate? Well, that prayer of Lord Chaitanya is a very, that the Shikshastakam prayer is, you meditate on that. It's a very, very potent and powerful mantra to meditate on. One should be more tolerant than a tree. Consider himself lower than the straw in the street. He should be fully willing to offer all respect to others without even giving a slight bit of respect for himself. So you say, well, what's the benefit of all this? I mean, it's just like, it sounds like a pretty austere thing to me. Well, that's given by Lord Chaitanya. He said, in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Ah, that's why I should do it. Because that's how I can get Namaruchi, you see? That's why to do the austerity of learning how to get together and be tolerant, you know, you disrespect me, well, I'm going to respect you. Even though you disrespected me, I'm going to respect you. I'm going to tolerate my tendency to get anger and want to slap you in the face. and I'm going to respect you. In spite of your being offensive to me, I'm just going to respect you. What do I get for that? That devotee may not, he may be too much of a neophyte to appreciate what I did, but I will get the taste for the name. You see, I will be able to chant Hare Krishna and actually connect. I will be able to come to that point of directly feeling the presence of Krishna when I chant his name. And even a higher stage, I'll come to that point when Krishna becomes fully revealed in front of me. I'll be able to see Krishna directly. So it's worth it. To follow this instruction of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to be more tolerant than a tree, to be respectful without getting any respect back, to be feeling yourself lower than the broken beer bottle out there in the street. That makes you a candidate to actually develop a taste for the name. And that's where it's really at. That's the whole point. We have to develop a taste for the name. If you don't develop a taste for the name, you're not really qualified to go back to Godhead. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's true. You don't develop Namaruchi is a step on the way to pure devotion. Prabhupada actually states, of course he also stated the other two, he states in his books, unless you're a pure devotee, you can't go back to Godhead. Whoa. You know, but Prabhupada has also said that if you just follow this process, he's also very mercifully said that if you sincerely follow this process, you'll go back. So, and by Prabhupada's mercy, anybody who's sincerely trying to become a pure devotee, he will go back. But actually, the rule is, unless you're completely pure, you can't go back. But Prabhupada can help us. Throw some bonus points at the end. I remember I one time took a Sanskrit course at the university. Really, not my propensity. It's tough. You know, all the grammars and all this stuff. And I was having a tough time in that course. And during the final, I was having a tough time. I went up and talked to the professor, and he gave me some bonus points. He gave me some question that would give me bonus points that I could answer. And I ended up with a B in the course because the professor was kind to me. I begged a little mercy during the final exam. He gave me a few. He said, "Do answer this one, I'll give you some bonus points." So Prabhupada can do the same thing. If you're sincerely trying your best, your spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada, they can throw you some bonus points at the end if you're having trouble. And we are having trouble. We're all having trouble. We come to pure devotional service right now. We're all having trouble. Let's face the fact. So we depend on the mercy of our spiritual masters, and we depend on the mercy of Srila Prabhupada because they can help us. They're throwing some, putting a good word for us, with Krishna at the time of death. Well, he sincerely tried. He sincerely tried. He had so many difficulties, but he never gave up trying. So, all right, if you recommend, then I will take it. You see, Krishna will take the word of the spiritual master also. So, okay, next question. It's only one question. Anything coming in from the internet? Yes. Here's a question from Austin, Texas. By serving our spiritual master, are we automatically serving Srila Prabhupada also? Yes, that is the system of disciplic succession. When you serve your spiritual master, you automatically are serving Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, his spiritual master, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his spiritual master, Jagannath Das Babaji, all the way up to the Goswamis, to Lord Chaitanya, and on back to Narada Muni, to Lord Rama, to Lord Krishna. So yes, when you serve your spiritual master, you serve everyone and all the predecessor acharyas. There's a mundane example of that. Just like you work for some corporation, you have your supervisor who has his supervisor, who has his supervisor all the way up to the CEO, you see. When you serve when you please your supervisor, then everybody's pleased all the way up and down the line. So it's the same principle. Okay, now we have a question. How to understand this as the ancestor and successors might be in different bodies? Also, they may not be desiring pure devotional service. I see, it's broken up. That's the middle of the question. I've read that a pure devotee can deliver hundreds of his family, ancestors, and successors. How to understand this is the ancestors and successors might be in different bodies. It doesn't matter where they are. Of course, they're obviously your ancestors, for the most part in this material world. That means they're caught somewhere in some body. They could be in an animal body. It could be in any situation. It could be, depends on their pious and impious activities. But it's a fact that no matter where they are, one becomes a pure devotee, he delivers so many of his predecessors, and no matter what kind of body they're in, that's a fact. How that happens, I can't say. Become a pure devotee and you'll see how it happens. You'll go back to Godhead and you'll see, wow, there's my great-great-grandfather. He came from a dog body and now he's here in Goloka, this amazing potency of Krishna. You'll see it and you'll understand it when you actually achieve it. So any other questions? Let's see. So how will they attain liberation? Now you'll have to see. Another question. This question is from Lithuania, it looks like. Do you wish to be where you are? Are you forced and would gladly leave to go to Goloka? Well, I take where I am right now. I just happen to be in Adelaide, Australia. I take this as wherever I am, somehow Krishna has put me here and to serve him in whatever position I am. And I take it as mercy. Wherever I am, it's Krishna's mercy that I happen to be in that particular place. So I don't feel I have to be anywhere else, you see. In the material world, everybody's unhappy. They think, well, if I could just live in New York, I'd be happy. Or if I could just live in Chicago, I can just live in Paris, I can just live in Sydney. Everybody's thinking the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. The cow's looking over there, well, the grass must be better on the other side. So in the material world, everybody is thinking, I got to be somewhere else. This is not the right place to be. I'm in the city, it's too hellish, I need to be in the country. I mean, in the country, it's too boring, I need to be in the city. You know, everyone's always thinking I need to be somewhere else. But when you're in Krishna consciousness, Krishna is there wherever you... Krishna is there, fully available, wherever you may be. So I don't need to go somewhere else. All I have to do is connect with Krishna, wherever I am, and then I can be absolutely, totally happy and peaceful. Because this material world is actually not the place to be. So there's no place in this material world you can be happy, because every place here is undesirable. But when you connect with Krishna, now you're actually living within your heart in the spiritual world. And that is the place to be. That's our natural habitat. We are meant to be in the spiritual world with Krishna. So once you connect by, you know, carefully chanting the holy names every day, taking shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, getting initiated, being an obedient disciple, these things put you into the spiritual world. Even though you're externally here, internally you're actually living in the spiritual world, and therefore you're fully happy wherever you may be, because you're actually in your original home with Krishna in the spiritual world. Okay, even though divorce is prohibited, but sometimes Krishna conscious devotees have divorce. No, they're not Krishna conscious. Anyone who's having a divorce is not, it's not Krishna conscious. They're in Maya. It's against our principles. It's a violation of Dharma. It's not Krishna. You can't say they're Krishna conscious devotees. They're non-Krishna conscious people when they're having a divorce. It's not Krishna conscious at all. It means they're putting themselves in the center instead of Krishna. For me, it was very simple. I mean, my parents were Christians, and they never even argued with each other. I never ever raised their voices at each other. Never. Not even one time. Never. They yelled. Never. They showed anger toward each other. So, wow, when I came to Krishna consciousness, there was no question of divorce. Because then I have to admit, well, Christianity is better than Krishna consciousness. You see? I had to at least be able to maintain what they maintain. And that is a solid marriage, no matter what. Because they never even yelled at each other. So, this is absolutely ridiculous. Divorce. It's not Krishna consciousness. Which will help them to practice devotional setter. They have a divorce to help them to practice devotional service better. Baloney. Now, if it's a non-devotee, that's another thing. You know, then there could be a possibility. You know, somebody who, you know, a meat-eating person who doesn't, inimical towards Krishna consciousness. But I know, I mean, I have disciples who, you know, are married, they have a karmic marriage, a karmic husband, and they came a devotee. The husband doesn't want to be a devotee, but that devotee is strong, and the spouse just has to go along with it, because the devotee half of the marriage is so strong and determined to be Krishna conscious. And then the divorce, and I'm convinced that in such marriages, the others, a non-devotee spouse will eventually become a devotee by the power of that person who is practicing Krishna consciousness. So we shouldn't rush into divorce. Even if you're married to a non-devotee, we should not rush into divorce. Better to just be strong in Krishna consciousness, and sooner or later your spouse will give up and say, okay, I'll be a devotee too. I mean, I saw it happen. We had a... in the old days, it was all just brahmacharis and living in the temple, and we had the house orders live in the temple too. There was nobody living on the outside back in the early days. And so Tamal Krishnamurti, he had this new vision that we would have householders, you know, living in their own homes, having jobs, etc. That wasn't the model of the original ISKCON. And so Tamal Krishnamurti got this. He was just the GBC at large. He didn't actually have a zone. He was a GBC at large with no zone. So he negotiated with a couple of GBCs and got the Houston and Dallas temples. He got Texas as his zone. And so what he did was brilliant strategy. It was at that time the real estate market in East Dallas was very cheap. So he got a BBT loan, he bought every house around the whole block. Across the street, the whole block, and then the houses across the street facing the block. He bought, it was really amazing. The Sankirtan score every day was how many houses were bought the day before. And it was done undercover, so they wouldn't know the temple was buying them up and they'd raise the price. It was in a sneaky way, you know. The neighbors didn't realize it was happening until all the houses had been bought. So no one raised and jacked up the prices. But what he did was he... actually, this was the... A lot of it was the genius of my godbrother Jivananda Prabhu. He was a householder who was actually living out in suburbia with a regular job. It was a very unusual situation. So he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, I'm going to preach and make devotees in suburbia. He said, you'll never do it. Tamal said, you'll never do it. But he did it. He made three couples, well, actually two, and one of them wasn't into it. This is the whole point of what I'm getting to. But he got these three couples to sell their houses and buy one of these houses, or actually rent one of these houses from the temple and run. And they packed up their suburban homes and moved into the East Dallas across the street from the temple. And but one of the spouses was not into it. They used to call her Wanda the Witch. She wasn't into it. And she just wasn't in the Krishna consciousness. But she had to come along for the ride because everybody else was coming. So she was just basically forced to come along for it. But then, in due course, she became a really fixed up devotee, even more Krishna conscious than her husband. So that's just an example. You have a point to make? Huh? Speak louder, please.
It's all being recorded.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. She would love to hear it, I'm sure. And she became a real success story. Became a very fixed up advanced devotee. All glories to her. I won't mention any names. But, she wouldn't mind. She wouldn't mind. So. Why is the Srimad Bhagavatam so important? Because it is Krishna himself manifesting. Krishna svadama pagate dharma gyanat bisaha kalau nashtada shangyesha purnanabhardano dekaha. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun and has arisen just after the departure of Lord Sri Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Those persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance of this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. It is so important because we are in the darkness of ignorance. We need to get the light of this Purana. If marriage means enemies, why is it said that marriages are made in heaven? Because that's the illusory energy. They're imagining that they're in heaven, but actually they're not in heaven. Louder, please. What'd she say?
Married to torture one another.
If marriage means gratifying your senses, should we get married or not? Well, it better not to. For men. In Vedic culture, it's better a man stays brahmacharya. But if he is not able to maintain brahmacharya life peacefully, then he should get married, and not as a matter of sense gratification, but get married to follow the regulated principles of household life. A lot of times in ISKCON now, they're misunderstood. Actually, Prabhupada taught us what are the regulated principles of household life. There's a Bhagavatam verse that says the householder, except for the procreation according to the order of the spiritual master, the householder is just as renounced from sex life as the brahmacharis and sannyasis. So this idea that sex life you can have, just like I was doing an initiation yajna, and one girl, you know, I asked her, what are the four regulated principles? She said, you know, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no sex out of marriage. I said, wait a minute. That's not the regulated principle. No illicit sex. Prabhupada says that sex life and marriage means you get this. This is actually right there in Prabhupada's books. He said, you get the permission of your spiritual master, that's the first thing. There's no sex life without your guru's permission. First thing is you get guru's permission, and then you chant, then after the most, once in a month, after chanting 50 rounds of japa eats, then you can try to have the child. And that's after the menstrual cycle, when the most likely time to conceive the child. I remember when I was a brahmachari years ago in our Miami temple. One morning, a house order couple walked up to me, and the man said, "Prabhu, Sankarshan Prabhu, we just want to share something with you." He said, "Last night, my wife and I, we both chanted 50 rounds to try to have a kid. But after we got the 50 rounds done, it was so ecstatic. It was so much relishing the nectar of the name and spiritual bliss of Krishna consciousness. We said, let's wait till next month to try to have a kid." So the point is that this, if you actually follow this principle, you're going to be in a high state of consciousness, and you'll have very high quality child to take birth in the womb, instead of some little brat, you know, that give you, tortures you your whole life, you see. So this is what house order life means. It means you're just like a brahmachari or a sannyasi. Actually, you know, and Prabhupada says how 50 years ago in Bengal, in the householder's life, the men would sleep in the outer quarters and women in the inner. They wouldn't sleep in the same room at night. You see? It's like brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, you see, except for procreation. So, yeah, this is not understood, and ISKCON devotees really, a lot of it is being lost now, the modern ISKCON since Prabhupada left. A lot of devotees don't understand this, and they argue that we have to have sex, otherwise there'll be a divorce. But no, you need to be Krishna conscious, that's all. And then, because actually this Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare, is better than sex. It's actually better than sex. You don't need, if you chant Hare Krishna and you really do it properly and avoid the offenses, you're going to taste pleasure better than sex pleasure. So who needs sex? Sex is coming down to a lower platform, you see. Coming down to a lower platform. When you can enjoy ecstasy and beyond the material plane. Okay, let's see if we got any more here. Anything else come in? Yeah?
How can a devotee say that if you don't have the sex, then it will end up in divorce, when we see the materialistic people are having abundance of sex?
Yeah, it's a bogus philosophy, it's right. Because we see the non-devotees are having sex, and they still get divorced. So it's not that sex is the way to keep a marriage together. Not the principle. Krishna consciousness, dharma, the sense of duty, is the way to keep a marriage together. That I have a duty to do it, to for Guru and Krishna's pleasure. I have to make this marriage work, even though sometimes it's hell for me. I got to make it work, you see. It's my duty. That's all. To be dutiful. That's the secret. Let's see what else we got here. How can we decide where to be tolerant or where to take action? Fight, for example, like Arjuna. Well, that's according to the order of the spiritual master. But it's also common sense. Just like you're dealing in the external, the realm, you know, dealing with the world around you. Well, when there's all kinds of nonsense going on around you that's not Krishna conscious, there's injustice that needs to be corrected. So how much do you tolerate and how much do you try to change it? That's the question. It's a very good question. The answer is this. Whatever you are able to actually change, whatever injustices or things going wrong in the world, you actually are able to rectify it, you should put your energy into that field. And whatever is completely beyond your scope to do anything about it, you just tolerate it. And then how do you know the difference? You have to pray to Krishna to please give me the wisdom to know where I can actually be effective to put my energies to rectify things that are going wrong in the world, and how much of it is that going to tolerate, you see. Just like, for example, right now there's all these abortion clinics going on around the world and slaughterhouses. Is there anything we can directly do right now about it? No. You see, we can't. We don't. If you go out and try to say you've got to close this abortion clinic, you've got to close this slaughterhouse, it won't be effective. So why, for now, we've got to tolerate it. But at the same time, we should educate those who are willing to be educated that it is wrong. You see? So that gradually as we educate more and more people, just by the sheer numbers in a democratic country, by the sheer numbers you can shut it down eventually. If you educate enough people to understand these points. So it's a matter of understanding how to go about these things to actually bring about the desired result of a Krishna-conscious world society. So our ultimate goal is to not tolerate any of this stuff. To shut down all the slaughterhouses, all the abortion clinics. That's our ultimate goal, but you have to proceed in a way that's going to be effective. And not foolishly do something that's going to be ineffective. So any other questions? Some I see are being written now. Let's see here. So, should we never respond whether feel anger if disrespected or treated rudely? It seems difficult. Well, one thing, as a parent, this is a mother writing it, the children should respect their elders, their parents. So, as a matter of duty, if somebody is sometimes, just like the spiritual master also, he has a duty to train his disciples to be respectful to him. That's not his ego trip, that's his duty. That's part of his duty. So, sometimes one has to train, sometimes one does have to be intolerant of disrespect or rudeness to train that person. Of course, in the that's on one level, but at the same time, the person who's actually qualified to do that, to properly do that, is able to tolerate it. He's not responding out of anger or retaliation mood. He can fully tolerate it. He has the ability to tolerate any disrespect. But out of kindness to help that person, he may not tolerate it and correct them for their disrespect. If that's clear. He has the ability to tolerate it, he's willing to tolerate it, but he has a duty to train that person to be respectful.
Narada Muni did the same thing in the two, Nala Kumara became the two trees.
Yes. Narada Muni is a good example. He could have fully tolerated the offense of Nala Kumara and Manigriba. Narada Muni, he can tolerate anything. He's completely pure devotee, Paramahamsa. But out of kindness, upon Nala Kumara and Manigriba, he cursed them to become trees in the courtyard, what would be the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. So that's a good example. Okay, there is a new fashion or trend nowadays, no marriage, no divorce, but live in relationships. Sometimes new people, due to their previous background, have such ideas. How do we tackle this idea? In the beginning, you've got to tolerate it. We can't introduce this, we do not introduce this movement as a bunch of rules and regulations. Prabhupada said, first let them get a taste for Krishna consciousness. You see? And then rules and regulations will come later. See, rules and regulations are not introduced for the sake of rules and regulations. That will turn people off big time. Don't be bad. You got to follow the rules. That doesn't work. You have to give people a taste for Krishna consciousness. And once they get a taste, wow, this is wonderful. How can I get more into this? How can I deepen this? How can I enrich and expand my Krishna consciousness? Well, you can follow these rules, you see. And by following these rules, now you can increase the ecstasy you're getting by chanting Hare Krishna. So that's how you have to introduce it, as Krishna consciousness. And then, and we have people coming, we have gay couples coming also, you see. To our movement. So, what do you say? We don't welcome gays. No, everyone come. Actually, everybody's a pervert. Anybody who's having illicit sex, whether they're masturbating, whether it's heterosex or homosex, it's all perversion. We're all perverts here. Practically all of us are perverts. So our movement is to turn all the perverts into pure devotees, you see. We're all perverts, practically everyone. Masturbators, heterosexuals, homosexuals, we're all bisexuals, we're all perverts. We shouldn't be proud. Well, I'm a hetero and you're a homo. you're a hetero pervert. Having illicit sex. Okay. The senses are always going to agitate us and must be controlled. This is true for any ashram, okay? So how when does a brahmachari conclude that his agitation is too much agitation, he should become a grihastha rather than than persevering, or simply what exactly is the indication that one should switch from brahmachari to grihastha? There's a nice example given by Prabhupada about Gajendra the elephant, how he was in the crocodile, you see. So if one is not able to function in the brahmachari ashram, or even a sannyasi, Prabhupada gave the example of sannyasi who fell down, and Prabhupada said a sannyasi, if he cannot handle it and he's losing, he can't maintain, he can go back and be a grihastha. Prabhupada is so kind. So if you find yourself in an artificial atmosphere, like in this case, the elephant is more powerful than the crocodile, because he was in the water, which is the environment of the crocodile was defeating him, you see. So if one finds that the brahmachari ashram, he's like an elephant being bitten by a crocodile in the water. He just can't, he's losing, he has no ability, he's being defeated by Maya, and he just can't, there's no way he can overpower the material energy as a brahmachari. He's trying, but he just cannot maintain his Krishna consciousness as a brahmachari. Then he can get married. But if you can maintain your Krishna consciousness as a brahmachari, then go for it. Because brahmachari life practically is guaranteed. If you're fixed in brahmachari life, you're practically guaranteed to go back to Ganem. Practically guaranteed. Household of life can be risky. Even Prabhupada said, even on the royal road, there is danger of accident. So it's a royal road, Grihastha Ashram, but it's having to go out and get a job, work in the material atmosphere all day long, you know, so many 40, 50, 60 hours a week out there with karmis, engaged in these activities where it's difficult to remember Krishna. It's a real austerity. You think brahmachari life is an austerity? Try getting married. Brahmachari life is it's an austerity, but it's actually, it's easier than being a householder. Really, it's easier. So householders doing that tapav, that's purifying them, you see. But if you can stay as a brahmachari and just be dedicated to worshiping the deity, preaching, serving under the temple authorities, you're sitting pretty in the brahmachari ashram. It's the best place. I was a brahmachari for 14 years, and it was really golden years of my Krishna conscious life. Golden years. Very valuable. Now, brahmachari life is a training ground for householders and for sannyasis. It's not that you have to remain a brahmachari. Prabhupada says brahmachari life is for those who are detached and for those who are attached, you see. And so by serving as a brahmachari, you'll gradually be revealed to you whether you're an attached or a detached nature. So either way, it's fine. If you're a brahmachari and you can't, and it doesn't work for you, then you can take that training as a very excellent training to be a first-class householder and go ahead and integrate the ashram. But if you can, so either way, you're being trained how to be a good householder, you're trained how to be a pakka sannyasi. Either way, brahmachari life is the training ground for householders and for sannyasis both, and vanaprasthas if one ends up being a vanaprastha. Okay, so let's see if we have any more. Oh, we're actually over time now. Okay. Huh?
You can keep going.
keep going till 11 o'clock? Actually, you know how long the original Bhagavatam class went for? 7 days. 24 hours. But we're not going to try to pull that off here. Let's see here. Sometimes we have to associate with materialists, especially family and school, how to always remember Krishna in that situation. Well, the key is you have to have very good sadhana in the morning. If you're living in the temple, get up for Mangalarti. You shouldn't be living in the temple unless you're getting up for Mangalarti. And if you're living at home, you should also get up and have a Mangalarti and a nice japa period before the sunrise. Very good sadhana, and you know, taking every spare minute of your 24 hours a day to read Prabhupada's books. When you're in the car, you can have a CD player listening to lectures on your way. Just do everything you can to enhance your Krishna consciousness at every minute. And then when you're out there in that material atmosphere, you'll be able to maintain your Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada gives the example of a doctor. The doctor has to have first-class hygiene, you see, personal hygiene, because he's dealing with sick people all day long who have diseases, isn't it? So the doctor, if he's going to maintain his profession as a doctor, he has to have very good personal hygiene so he doesn't get contaminated by the sick people he's dealing with all day long. So in the same way, a devotee has very good spiritual hygiene. He rises early, he takes a bath, he puts tilak, he chants his japa, he sings Ravastakam prayers. He has a very nice, intensely focused morning program before he begins his school or his work activities. And in that way, he's solidly fixed throughout those activities. That's the key. How to preach to family members if they don't accept your way of Krishna consciousness and don't even accept prasadam? Don't tell them it's prasadam. At one point in my devotional career, I was doing some business to support our ashram, part-time business, Travelrama. It used to be the devotees in North America all knew me. They would buy tickets to India for me. But so I had some business partners. There was one travel agency owner who was a business partner of mine. He was a Christian from South India. And they know what prasadam is. Okay. And they know that prasadam is taboo. You never take prasadam. So it was Christmas time, and I had some cookies. And I said, oh, Willie, here's some cookies for you. He said, oh, is it prasadam? I said, oh, no, it's not prasadam. And he took that. So you have to be tactful. Don't tell them it's prasadam. Say, hey, Mom, here's some really good cookies. A friend of mine made these cookies. They're really great. Are they prasadam? Oh, no, they're not prasadam. So this way, you have to not be tactful, you see. It's actually the greatest, to lie in that case is the greatest honesty, because you're trying to connect them with Krishna, the absolute truth. So be tactful. One thing is, once you come to Krishna consciousness, be more helpful in the house. Be the best kid you were ever in your whole life. And go, wow, what's brought this change? And you're so helpful, you're so willing to do things. Before, you didn't want to do anything. What's this change? What's this change in you? Well, it's because I'm chanting Hare Krishna. It's put me in a mood. I love to do service. See, oh, wow. This must be pretty good. You never had a service mood before. You see. So in this way, you have to see how you can soften their hearts. Okay. All right. Here's the flashlight. So there was mention of marriage being a torture for another. Does that mean that women are condemned to torture, as Srila Prabhupada said that all women should get married? No. No, nobody is condemned to torture and be tortured. We're simply making a point. Actually, in a Krishna conscious marriage, that happens. I mean, even in the ashram, that kind of thing happens. Sometimes, you know, there's just Sometimes we're torturing each other by misunderstanding. It's something that happens in any group of people. There's misunderstandings. Unless we're pure devotees, that kind of stuff will happen. So we're just being honest. Any kind of relationship, there's going to be difficult moments. Any kind of relationship. Friends, neighbors, it's always going on in the material world. So it's not that women are condemned. And actually, a woman is not forced to get married either. No woman is forced to get married in Krishna Kanda's movement. I know my god sister Arundhati, Prabhupada arranged, actually it's an old BTG article. There was a famous Bhaktivedanta article magazine about a wedding in Boston. So Prabhupada was arranging marriages, like a father, arranging the marriage for his kids. He's arranging marriages. Bhardwaj married Rukmini, Nandakishore married Janava, and Vaikunthanath married Saradiya. Yeah, he arranged. And so he wanted to arrange a husband for Arundhati also. And there is, and she just did. She was, growing up as an American woman, the idea of having her marriage arranged is just too much, and she just couldn't handle it. And Prabhupada said, "All right," she did. But then now she's the only there was a Brahmacharini ashram. There was the four girls, you see, but now she's the alone Brahmacharini, and all the other girls are married. So not that she wanted to get married. So it's not that she was forced, generally, we see that the woman's nature, she likes to be married. Some rare case, a woman may not want to get married, she's not forced to get married. But it's not easy. It can be difficult for a woman who's not married. Because this world, the women are exploited. And to have a man, husband means your own personal bodyguard, basically, in many ways. It's a world of exploitation. To have a man who's protecting you from exploitative, unscrupulous men is a great help in the life of a woman. So it's actually a blessing for a woman to get a Krishna conscious marriage. Yeah?
It has to be Krishna conscious, otherwise marriage has no meaning.
Yeah, if you're not Krishna conscious, it's just like dogs and cats, or dogs. It doesn't make any sense. You have to be Krishna conscious. And then it is in heaven. Marriage is in heaven if it's Krishna conscious. The fact. Anything else? Let's see here. Yeah? Oh, okay. Just, all right. So, we can make it an... we forgot to announce it last night. I do have a book that just came out, just newly released book called Truth Works. And it's a big. It was a very hot item in Melbourne. Over 100 copies were sold. So, anybody who wants to, it's basically questions and answers. On my e-course, people ask questions regularly, and the selected questions and answers were put together, and it's all arranged by subject matter. So you may find it very helpful for your Krishna consciousness. It's a nice forward by Hari Sari Prabhu recommending the book. And anybody would like to get it, I give you a personal blessing and signature along with the book. It will be available now and also tonight, tomorrow. They are available. And so we'll stop here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.